Hallo en welkom bij aflevering 153 van de Enhorning Show, waar het draait om hoe je online meer resultaat boekt voor jouw bedrijf. Hoe je het ondernemen online gebruikt voor meer klanten en omzet. Mijn naam is Enhorning en ik deel opgedane kennis, ervaringen en expertise. Mijn missie is het om slechte online resultaten van goede bedrijven de wereld uit te helpen. En vandaag, today, een bijzonder gesprek met Bernadette Jiwa. Bernadette is a recognized global authority on business philosophy and the role of identity and story in business, innovation and marketing. Named by Smart Company as one of Australia's top business thinkers in 2018, she is the author of 7 best-selling books on marketing and brand storytelling. Bernadette advises, consults, and speaks with entrepreneurs and business leaders from startups to Fortune 500 companies who want to do work they are proud of and create the future they want to see. Her work takes her from Melbourne to New York and everywhere in between. I started to read her books and posts a few years ago. She publishes her short posts with great insights every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Her first book that I read was Fortune Cookie Principle. And a week ago, I purchased her latest book, Story Driven. The books helped me to find my backstory and start to use it. Enjoy some backstories by Bernadette in our conversation. And I have to tell you a bit honestly, I was nervous for this conversation because I had spent quite some time preparing the conversation. And what I hope to accomplish is that you get to know Bernadette a bit and learn about using the backstory for your business because it gives you great results. Enjoy the insights with Bernadette. Let's get started.
Welkom in de Erno Hanning Show, de podcast waarin je alles leert over de online sales funnel. Met succesvolle ondernemers en experts, praktische tips en tools die je helpen voor meer resultaat online. Dan nu jouw online sales funnel expert, Erno Hanning.
Ik werk aan een nieuw idee van een aantal andere podcastafleveringen, waarbij ik samen met jou naar de 11 winstoptimisatie elementen kijk van online en hoe je dat doet en wat je zou kunnen veranderen en verbeteren voor nog meer klanten via online. Ben jij geïnteresseerd in zo'n gesprek met mij dat we opnemen en uitzenden voor de podcast? Stuur me dan een berichtje op podcast@ernohanning.nl. Een bepaald moment tijdens het gesprek ging er iets mis met Skype. De verbinding met haar verbrak even en daarna is mijn kant niet meer opgenomen. Gelukkig de kant van Bernadette wel, maar ik ben alles aan mijn kant verloren. Dus nu heb ik een opname gemaakt met aan mijn kant na die tijd ingesproken en daarna haar antwoorden. Dus het klinkt misschien wat vreemd, zo is het niet opgenomen, maar ik moest dit doen om het te herstellen. Veel plezier met de opname met Bernadette. It's Bernadette Jiwa. Welcome, Bernadette.
Oh, thanks for having me, Erno. It's lovely to chat to you.
See, you've been having a lot of good press about like the top biz thinker in 2018, the 20 best biz blog in 16 and 15. You have 6 number one Amazon books. You're amazing. You were born and raised in Ireland in Dublin.
That's right.
How did this form the start of your story?
I always tell people when they ask me about where this storytelling bug hit me, I would say that Dublin is the storytelling capital of the world. When I was growing up, you couldn't avoid hearing stories or having striking up conversations with people, obviously long before we all stuck our earbuds in our ears at bus stops and in stores. And it's a very friendly place. It's a place where people are very curious to know people's backstories and histories. I think that's because in Dublin, much like Australia, we're a land of people who come and go across the sea. And there are a lot of migrants and a lot of comings and goings. So I think with that in mind, we're very curious people. And for me, that was a good backdrop to being curious about other people's stories. So that's, I feel, where my story began and how I got interested in storytelling and what makes people tick.
Do you think that this people moving in and out of country, this people migrating, also was a reason for them to tell stories, to gift stories to other people?
I think it's in the DNA of Irish people. I don't know where we get our curiosity, and I guess maybe we have to make up the folklore and our backstory and try to understand who it is that we are and what it is we believe in and what it is we care about as a nation, as all nations do. I mean, every nation, every brand, every person has got their own sort of backstory and history that they need to make sense of, because that enables us to collectively go forward and create the future we want to see.
And at some point, you moved to Australia. When did you move to Australia?
We've been here about 13 years now.
So, and when did it start? When did you start writing?
You know, I didn't really know let me just take a step back. I think my English teacher from high school, Miss McGinley, would be very surprised to know that I am a writer, because it wasn't anything that was really flagged. I think I could write well when I was a little kid, but when you get to high school and you start doing essays about to pass exams, I think some of that creativity is beaten out of you. And it was only when I came to Australia and started blogging about things that I was curious about and things that I was noticing, and connecting them to business and marketing and humanity and why we do the work we do and the way that we do it, that I discovered apparently I can write, and I'm lucky to have people who like to read what I write. That's a real privilege.
I love reading your posts and your books. I've been reading now 4 out of the 7 books. I can everybody just encourage to read your books. And also, I think that your posts are short and great, because they are about every day. You have a very strict rhythm of posting.
I do.
Do you think that this strict rhythm helps you to get your blog so visible instead of writing long posts?
Definitely. Because I don't know if you follow Seth Godin's work, but he's been a huge influence on me, and he talks a lot about this. When you know you've got to post a post, then you find the inspiration to write something. So if you say to yourself, I'm posting every day, as he does, which I don't do, I think he's phenomenal, and he has done for years. When you say that to yourself, I'm showing up on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and I want to have something to say to the people who I'm lucky enough want to hear from me, then it switches some switch in your brain. It flips a switch, and you just you find inspiration and creativity all around you. And I think you'll notice from my writing, it's stuff I see around me and stuff that I'm noticing around me that I try to make sense of, and hopefully it helps other people to make sense of what they're doing in their businesses and their lives and the work that they do.
The advantage of having these strict rhythms of posting and you need to post every Wednesday, every Monday, Wednesday and Friday, mm-hmm. helps you, of course, to look at small things and to find a story around the small things. And if you are not mm-hmm. very strict on posting, that you could, you think these small things are not worth a post.
When you try to find meaning in things that you see, the common things around you, and suddenly they're the things that are also relevant to other people.
So you are curious about the everyday things and interested in stories. So when did you get interested in stories of companies?
Well, I actually started working with, if I step back, a lot of my colleagues and friends started asking me to help them with their brand stories. So they started asking me about how they were going to bring their businesses to life. And it almost happened by accident. I thought, okay, well, this is a business because people want to pay me to do this work. So that's some time ago now. So I started locally, and obviously now I have a reputation for being able to help people to differentiate their brands and to understand what it is that makes them unique and how to shine a light on that. And my latest book, the one I think you've been reading, is all about that. It's all about how to get out of this idea of competing and understand what is unique about you and your identity and how to use a framework that helps you to do that.
I want to get back to that framework in a bit. I'm curious about, because you have all these variation in sizes of companies. You work for big ones, for large corporations, and you work for small ones. Is it harder to write, to find the stories of these large corporations?
What's interesting is when large corporations come to work with me, sometimes what you uncover is that they've forgotten their backstory. So you'll find that everybody knows the Airbnb story. Lots of people still know the Nike story, even though that's a little bit older, or the Warby Parker story. People know those stories and they find them really fascinating. And they also forget that 100-year-old company or a 200-year-old company was founded on the same premise as those new startup companies that seem a bit more sexy. So what we do is go back and find what it was that was the impetus for the business to the founder to start this business. And usually it's 99 times out of 100, it was somebody who saw people struggling with something, cared about something enough to want to solve it. It's usually a really noble cause or something that people really cared about solving. And that's really helpful to a global brand or an older business that's obviously grown exponentially, gotten bigger, maybe had an IPO, has shareholders, and now they need to get back to what is at the heart of what they do, because that's what's going to drive their people to do great work.
Yeah, I can see that the original owner, the founder of the company, had some sort of vision, some sort of purpose where he was going with this idea and how to change the world.
That's right. And I think purpose is quite a hot topic right now. And there's a lot of talk about, you know, what's our mission, what's our purpose. And sometimes we get confused about, you know, our mission is to provide some kind of outcome for shareholders. And sometimes we just try and pluck a mission out of thin air because, well, we need to have one because we need to put that up on our website, some kind of mission statement. But in actual fact, there's a lot more to it than that. There is some kind of truth in your story, whether you're a solopreneur or whether you're a global corporation. There's some kind of nugget of truth in your backstory, which is the reason why you exist, and you need to find that.
In the last couple of days since I was reading your book, I've been really busy with work and I'm finding my backstory and just tracing back. And also, I've learned great stories of my own. What was the favorite story that you heard the last year or the last 6 months?
Oh, so many stories. One of my favorites from the book that's not so well known, because I tried to steer away from, I have used examples like Airbnb in the past, but it was one about a pottery company, which is Emma Bridgewater Pottery, who the founder of that company, who happens to be the lady with the same name, it's based in the UK, and she grew up in a family where her mother always had welcomed people into the kitchen. They always had wonderful parties, but very casual dining, and the kitchen table was somewhat of a holy place in their household. And she was looking for crockery as a gift for her mother, and she couldn't find it. So she just decided to go and make it. So there was some kind of connection to the feeling from her past that she wanted to give to other people in this, you know, physical product. And she and her husband now run the business, but they have done phenomenally well because of that. They're not just about making crockery. They're about, you know, helping people to celebrate times together. And because of that, they're succeeding because they're very grounded in the purpose.
Having this purpose is helping, of course, everybody in the company to work harder, have more fun, and enjoy it more.
Yeah, exactly. There's another company in the UK along the similar lines, which is not featured in the book, but she also, another part to her purpose is in Stoke-on-Trent, which is the area where she manufactures her pottery, when she was going to that area to find potters, everybody else was closing down their factories. So as people who are listening might know, the industry was dying in the UK at that time, and she really felt a responsibility to keep the tradition alive in her country and in the area. Another brand which with a great story, which is not featured in the book, I've featured them in other books, is Hyatt Denim. They're in Wales. David and Claire have got a beautiful story in that there was a jeans factory in their town that big brands used to have their clothing manufactured in, and then they moved manufacturing offshore, and David and Claire took it on, and their simple message is our town is making jeans again. So that's their purpose, is to keep this skill alive in their town. And you know, their hats off to people like that who really put their shoulder to doing that work and helping people to thrive in their local area.
Wasn't that in the book meaningful, the story?
Yeah, it probably was. we're losing track now.
Yes, and what I learned from this story as well is that how it's important to create jobs. And as she was saying, it is the greatest privilege of creating jobs. And I've never looked at it that way. That's a great way of looking at it, is that you are doing something and creating jobs.
We forget that, we gloss over that, because you know, it is a privilege to work with people. It is a privilege to serve people, but it's also a privilege to give people meaningful work to do. So if we can build those kinds of companies that we're proud of, like the Patagonia type brands, like the work that Claire and David are doing in Wales and Emma Bridgewater is doing in Stoke, then we make a better world. We're creating the future we want to see.
Yeah, it's of course great that you, as an owner with your company, large or small, trying to create a world that you want to see. But let's get to one of the stories in your new book, Story Driven, about Volkswagen and how they lost touch and how they somehow forget how they want to see the world, and they were just now you know, with the Dieselgate, just losing grip of their story.
If we look at the Volkswagen thing, if we unpack that a little bit, it was just that they've lost their way, essentially. They forgot who they were, and their purpose started to be beating everyone else and being number one. So they start to compete. And so the premise of the book is that there are two types of companies. There's a competition-driven company, which is very reactive to the marketplace. And then there's a story-driven company, which is very responsive to customers' needs. And however you operate, whichever way you choose to operate, affects the culture you create. It can't but. If you are totally focused on one kind of metric, and whatever you measure is, you're telling your employees that that's the output they need to work towards, then they will work towards it, because that's how their performance will be judged. So if you unpack it all, it's inevitable that when you start only measuring that one thing, which is shareholder value and being number one, then these missteps are going to occur. Whereas if you pull back from that and you think, well, there's more than, you know, in our society, we've come to the point where we've forgotten that there's more than one way to win. You know, winning is all about being first or being biggest, and that's not necessarily the case. I think that brands like Hyatt Denim and Emma Bridgewater and a lot of the entrepreneurs I feature in the book, The Fiasco Gelato, they're winning by, you know, bringing joy to people in their community, by building a great company, by employing people and giving them meaningful work. And they're still making money, right? I'm not saying you shouldn't make money, but they're still doing that also. They're doing the other pieces also.
If you want to be number one, it's all about beating others. It's like a war. It's trying to get other people down.
Exactly. And, you know, the comparison that I make at the start of the book between Tesla, the very mission-driven company, you know, they want to create, they want everybody to be driving a sustainable vehicle because they care about the environment, and they don't want us to, you know, the planet to self-destruct. It's a noble goal. What's interesting is now that a company, and we're going to beat Tesla, we have got the capability to beat them. And the irony here is that by like that, what they're doing is helping Tesla to achieve their purpose. Because if every car company starts manufacturing greener cars, then that's Tesla's purpose being fulfilled. That's not necessarily Volkswagen's purpose being realized.
Yes, so when Volkswagen is trying to beat everybody and Tesla is trying to improve the world, and they don't need to build every car that, you know, changes the world. When all the other car companies are going to build cars that have less impact on the environment, Tesla still wins. It's the improving the world together, not just beating the other ones.
Exactly. I was going to try and pull up their mission there because it's so beautifully stated. And, you know, even their strategy on their website's laid out for all to see. So they say our goal when we created Tesla a decade ago was the same as it is today, to accelerate the advent of sustainable transport by bringing a compelling mass market electric cars to the market as soon as possible. That was 5 years ago, that was updated, but they've been doing this for 15 years. And now what they've got is other companies coming on board, not because that's their mission, but because they see an opportunity to fulfill a need that people are saying, yeah, we want to move that way. This is what we want. So they're satisfying demand, not necessarily working towards something that's their mission.
If you, as a listener, want to dig deeper into this story, into your backstory, and to get your vision and mission clear, then you use the framework that's in the book. So I want you to use the book and buy the book to get this framework.
Well, they don't even need to buy the book. They can jump on.
No, I want the listeners to buy the book.
Well, they can buy the book, but the framework is also free to download, and I will send you the link so you can put it in your show notes. But so the framework, if you imagine a pyramid, and it's something like a Maslow's hierarchy of needs type design, and the base of the framework is your backstory. So this understanding of who you are, what it is in your backstory that compels you to do this thing that you want to do now. So I give some people some prompts in the book around discovering what the connection is between who they were in their past to who they to what they the work they do today. And then on top of that foundation is your values, so the things that you believe in and that are non-negotiable for you. And then you start digging into what your purpose is. on top of that, then, is your vision. What's the contribution you want to make? So story-driven companies are very vision-driven. They're very contribution-driven. A lot of companies think about, well, our vision is to become number one at some time in the future. And that's a sort of a selfish goal. And the companies that do better, in to my mind, are the companies that have some kind of contribution built into their DNA. And then on top of that is your strategy. So if you don't know where you come from, why you're doing what you do and where you're going, how can you create a plan for any kind of growth or satisfying consumer demand if you don't know who you are? So that's it in a nutshell.
Yes, and there are great examples with all these stories of small companies, large companies, all these examples that you've used the framework to explain the story of a company. And I love especially the stories of the smaller companies, the happy tram driver or the fiasco gelato. There is also one part of this framework that I have a little bit of trouble with when I'm looking at my own. When I say that I want to help get rid of bad results for business for online, I want to get the bad results of good businesses out of the world. What is that? Is that the vision or is that the purpose? I'm confused here.
Well, if you think about that, let's extrapolate on that. Let's draw that out. So, what happens when? Because you do that work, what happens 5 years down the track for a business owner when you help them to do that?
Well, the business owner will get better results. They will get more results from online. They will attract more clients and confirm them to orders. So they will increase their revenue and get a better and just get a better business from online.
So if we think about that and we draw that out a little bit more, what you're actually doing is helping entrepreneurs and the entrepreneurial economy to thrive. And that could be your contribution. So you need to think forward into the future. So your purpose is, why do I exist? Why does my company exist today? And then your vision is, what's my contribution to the future?
Yes, that's a great way of looking at it. I can give a contribution there. Bernadette, thank you very much for doing this conversation with me. I loved having you on the show, and I'm really grateful that you are here. Where can people find you? Where can people best find you online?
My website is thestoryoftelling.com.
Yes, so the website is thestoryoftelling.com. Where can they find you on the Twitters or else?
It's Bernadette Giwa, just my name, and the same on LinkedIn.
Well, that's it. A great conversation with Bernadette about her new book, Story Driven, and also about her previous books as well. But we're talking about stories. And thank you very much, Bernadette.
Thanks, Erno. It was lovely to chat to you.
Dat was het. Gave en voor mijn gevoel net iets te korte gesprek met Bernadette, want ik had maar 30 minuten. Ik zou nog langer met haar willen praten, maar goed, een volgende keer. Je vindt de namen en de links die we noemen in het artikel dat bij deze uitzending hoort. Ga daarvoor naar ernohanning.nl/show153. Je hebt net gehoord, wil je haar opzoeken op Twitter Bernadette Giwa en op het web thestoryoftelling.com. thestoryoftelling.com. Als je dit een gave aflevering vond en je wil laten weten aan mij dat je het ook zo vindt en je hier vaker mee wilt horen, abonneer dan op de Erno-Hanning Show. Dat zie ik in ieder geval. Dit kun je doen op iTunes of op jouw favoriete podcast app, zoals de Apple Podcast of Stitcher of welke app je ook gebruikt. Zoek op de Erno-Hanning Show. Klik op het plusje of abonneer en je hoort elke week een nieuwe aflevering van mij. Heb je een opmerking, vraag, een reactie op deze aflevering of op mijn podcast, stuur me een e-mail naar podcast@ernohanning.nl. Ik hoor super graag van jou en graag tot de volgende. Wil jij weten wat de 11 winstoptimalisatie elementen zijn voor online marketing en verkoop? Vraag dan het gratis boekje aan. Dit doe je op winstoptimalisatieboekje.nl. De digitale versie krijg je helemaal gratis en voor het fysieke boekje betaal je alleen de verzendkosten. Vraag jouw boekje nu aan op winstoptimisatieboekje.nl. Je leest het in één avond uit. winstoptimisatieboekje.nl.
Dankjewel voor het luisteren naar de Erno Hanning Show op ernohanning.nl.